Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. Performed by Terrence Hazelford, Danny Gavigan, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, Elizabeth Demery, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, David Coyne, Eric Messner, James Konacek, Yasmin Toison, M.B. Van Dorn, Lily Beacon, Dylan Lynch, Drew Kopas, Catherine Hazelford, Tony Nam, Johan Detweiler, Nanette Savard, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, Jonathan Watkins, and Mort Shelby. Texas Rangers number 5, Texas Vendetta. For the last 12 miles, Andy Pickard and Farley Brackett had ridden in almost total silence. One ignored his partner, and the other tried to. They talked no more than the sure-footed little Mexican pack mule that followed them across the Texas Hill Country's rocky ground. Andy figured that the ranger captain was sore at him for some reason, detailing him with dour Farley Brackett on this locate-and-arrest mission. The captain had said once that he'd like Farley with him in a fight, but he sure as hell didn't want his company afterward. Farley usually looked as if he'd just come back from a funeral. The captain had probably been glad to get him out of camp for 2 or 3 days and let the sun shine in. Andy and Farley carried a warrant for the arrest of one Joseph Bransford on a charge of robbery and attempted murder. He had ambushed a stock farmer back in Colorado County, leaving him for dead after taking money the farmer had collected for selling a team of mules. The captain had received a tip that Bransford was hiding out north of the Llano River on a hardscrabble homestead operated by his sister and her husband, Abner Leach. Leach claimed to be a farmer, but he was suspected of operating a way station for stolen livestock. No one had been able to prove it to the satisfaction of a jury. So far as the captain could determine, Leach was not currently wanted by the law, despite his shady reputation. However, it was probably only a matter of time before he was caught knee-deep in some ill-conceived activity that would put his name on the Rangers fugitive list. As they continued into the west, Andy had to squint against the setting sun. Night was going to catch them before they reached the Leach place. That was all right with Andy. He liked a little low-level excitement, but he had no interest in getting killed.
Fixing to be sundown pretty quick, Farley. We'd make too good a target riding up in broad daylight anyway. Captain told us those folks are apt to put up a fight if we don't catch them off guard.
Anybody's liable to put up a fight when they're looking at a stretch in the penitentiary. These people ain't bright, but even a fool can sight down a gun barrel and kill you. If we was to shoot them both, Bransford and Leach, the taxpayers wouldn't have to foot the cost of a trial.
There's no charges out against Leach.
There will be sooner or later. Shoot him now and we'll save some squatter from getting his livestock stolen.
Andy could see a certain twisted logic in Farley's view of summary justice, but it went against many stern lectures peace officers like Rusty Shannon had preached to him about the importance of law, about the presumption of innocence until guilt was proven. He wished he had Rusty with him now instead of Farley.
Rangers don't go around shooting prisoners.
Wake up and look around, you badger boy. Sometimes justice gets served out in the brush where there's no witnesses. No pettifogging lawyers, no bought-off jury. By the time you get a few more years on you, you'll know what I mean.
Andy gritted his teeth at that jab about his inexperience. He was evidently the youngest man in the company, though nobody knew his age. The best guess was over 20 years, or maybe a bit more. Indians had killed his father and mother when he was small and had carried him off to raise as their own. Circumstances had thrust him back into Texan hands before his voice began to change. He had had to learn English all over again and stumble along on the white man's road, learning the hard way by trial and error, lots of error. Even with Rusty Shannon's guidance, it had been a rough road to follow after knowing only the ways of the Comanche. He was keenly aware that he still looked young to be riding with the Rangers. He had recently tried growing a mustache in an effort to appear older. He had shaved it off after 3 weeks because it looked pathetically thin and weak. And he was aware that an element of truth existed behind Farley's talk about shooting prisoners. He had heard whispered stories about outlaws shot trying to escape. If a man was considered dangerous, it was safer to carry him in dead, and a quick burial was cheaper on the county. No criminal ever climbed out of a grave to file an appeal. Many people were afraid of Farley Brackett, with cause. He had come home from the Yankee War with a long scar on his face and a deeper one etched into his soul. During Reconstruction years, he had become a scourge to the federally backed authorities. The Unionist State Police had chased him often, but had learned from bitter experience not to get close enough to catch him. Once the old-time Texans regained political control of their state, transgressions against the former government had been forgiven, even applauded. The reorganized Rangers had been glad to have Farley join their ranks. He knew how men on the Dodge thought and acted because he had been one. And he thought he still had the shifty wolf eyes of a fugitive. In the fading light of dusk, Andy could make out a dim wagon trail.
You sure these tracks lead to the Leech place?
Of course I'm sure. I'm always sure. I came this way before, hunting a pile of leeches that stuck up a Dutchman over in Friedrichsburg. Leech tried to point me onto the wrong trail. I'd have shot him when I had the chance. We wouldn't have anybody to worry about now but Bransford.
They followed the wagon tracks until Andy saw a lamplight ahead.
Looks like we found the cabin.
Never was lost. I knew where it was at.
I guess we'll wait till they're asleep, then bust in?
No, we'll make a dry camp and wait till morning. Bust in now, we'll have Bransford and Leech both to fight. Well, that ain't counting the woman, but I expect she'll just scream faint and fall down.
In the morning, they'll all be awake.
We'll wait till the men are separated so we can handle them one at a time. Last time I was here, Leech came out about daylight to milk. We'll surprise him with the cow light.
And Bransford?
He'll give up when he sees we're fixing to burn the cabin down around him.
Or he'll come out shooting.
Good. We can finish him off legal and proper.
We can't burn a cabin with a woman in it.
She'll come out soon as his skirt starts smoking. People like them, you don't ask permission or beg their pardon.
I doubt the Adjutant General would approve of it.
The Adjutant General. Sitting comfortable at a desk in Austin, writing rules like he was dealing with law-abiding citizens. Out here, the owl hoots in the daytime, same as at night. Things look a lot different.
They moved back to the far side of a cedar-crowned hill where they could build a small fire without its being seen from the cabin. As they dismounted, Farley gave Andy a cold look.
Cook us something fit to eat.
Andy started to remind Farley that they were the same rank, each a private, but changed his mind. The day might come when he had a showdown with Farley, but it would have to be over something more important than this. He took a pack from the back of the mule while Farley coaxed a small pile of dead wood into a blaze. Andy wished he had some of the dried buffalo meat that Comanches carried on long rides, or the pemmican they made by pounding dried meat, berries, and nuts together. He preferred it over fatback broiled on the end of a stick. But he would settle for fatback, because that was all he and Farley had brought. That and cold biscuits dried hard enough to drive a nail. Andy knew no fat rangers. Water from their canteens yielded a cup of coffee apiece. Farley sat back, stretching his long legs, and slowly sipped his coffee as he might nurse a shot of whiskey. He seemed to withdraw into some private part of his mind, as distant as if he were back in the company headquarters camp on the San Saba River.
I wish Rusty was with us.
What's the matter, Badger boy? You need a nursemaid?
Farley took perverse pleasure in using the English version of the name by which the Comanches had known Andy. He was like some malevolent shaman who could summon up a dark and rumbling cloud from a bright and sunny day.
Rusty always knows what to do.
He's not a ranger anymore. Probably a good thing. He always allowed the other fella too much of an edge. Sooner or later, he'd get himself killed taking pity on people that have no pity coming to him.
Rusty had pity on me when I needed help, and God knows I caused him trouble enough for a while.
Rusty had taken Andy into his log cabin home on the Colorado River. He had managed to maintain his patience while Andy made the slow and painful transition from Comanche life. Andy had run away more than once, trying to return to his adoptive Indian family. He had fist-fought boys from miles around when they ridiculed him for the Indian braids he refused to cut and the moccasins he wore instead of shoes. The braids were gone now, and so were the moccasins. He wanted to fit in, to be the kind of ranger Rusty had been. But he retained a remnant of Indian upbringing. They would probably always be there. Drinking his bitter coffee, he lapsed into silence, pondering tomorrow, and wishing he were as sure of himself as Farley seemed to be. Morning was a long time coming. Andy lay awake most of the night, visualizing the expected confrontation, imagining the worst that might happen. He pictured Leech's woman lying dead after the smoke cleared, much as he had seen his white mother dead years ago. It was one of his earliest memories, long suppressed because it was so terrible. The image still returned from time to time like a nightmare that would not wait for the night. Farley slept like a baby. Wasn't hardly fair to Andy's mind. The stars still glittered when Farley came out from beneath his blanket. He looked up at them to get a rough notion of time.
We better get ourselves in position before daylight wakes up the rooster.
And we ought to fix some breakfast first?
When we're done, we'll make Leech's woman cook us a proper meal.
Thought you were going to burn her cabin down.
Well, they raise pigs. Catch us a juicy shoat and have a roasted over the coals.
Andy rolled to his feet, bundled up his bedroll, and started to pack the mule.
Stop that! Don't you know a stupid mule is liable to smell feed and go in there braying his head off? We'll leave him here and pick him up when the job is done.
Chastened, Andy tied the mule, then followed Farley toward their quarry. The cabin was still dark as the two rangers circled around to come in behind the milk shed. They had their horses in a clump of trees. The cow stood outside the gate, waiting in bovine patience for the grain that awaited her in the stanchion. She turned her head to watch the men approach on foot. She seemed to know they were strangers and drew away. She didn't go far because she'd not nursed her calf or had her morning feed. Hogs in a nearby pen snuffled and shifted at their scent, but quickly settled back down. Andy's nose pinched. He'd never gotten used to the smell of pigs. Horses disliked them, and so did Comanches. Presently, he saw lamplight in a cabin window. A man opened the door and came out carrying a bucket.
That's Leech. He's meaner than a bull hog with hives. Be ready for real trouble.
You don't figure on shooting him, do you?
Not without he gives me cause. But if he gives me cause, I sure won't take a chance with him.
Andy's hands were tense on his rifle. He could handle a pistol, but a rifle felt steadier and seemed to carry more authority. He couldn't see if Leech was armed. The man's face was featureless in the dim light of early dawn, but Andy could see that his body was broad and muscular. He looked as if he'd be hard to handle in a fight. Farley waited until Leech opened the gate for the cow to enter the lot. He stepped out into the open and shoved the pistol forward, almost in Leech's face.
Hands up, we're rangers.
Leech stopped dead, then wilted and raised trembling hands.
Don't shoot! For God's sakes, Ranger, don't shoot!
You're harboring a fugitive. We got a warrant for Joseph Bransford's arrest.
Go help yourself! He's in the cabin! Only please don't shoot! I'm a married man! My wife depends on me!
Cuff this cowardly son of a bitch to the fence post. Leech, if you holler, I'll blow a hole in your brisket.
I won't make a peep!
That was easy.
Now, Bransford's apt to come at us like a mad bull. Be ready to shoot him.
What about the woman?
Don't worry none about her. She'll wilt like blue bonnets in June.
A wagon stood in front of the cabin. Farley placed himself behind it. He motioned for Andy to take cover behind a dug well ringed by a circular rock structure about 3 feet high with a windlass and wooden bucket on top.
Joseph Bransford! Listen to me! We're the Rangers. There's 10 of us and we got this cabin surrounded. Come out with your hands up or we'll burn the place down and roast you like one of these here pigs.
For emphasis, Farley fired a shot that showered splinters from the upper part of the door.
Ah! Let the woman come out first. We got no paper on her.
The woman came out, waving a heavy chunk of firewood, and made straight for Farley.
You 12 kinds of egg-sucking dog!
She was tall and broad and looked as if she could wrestle a mule to its knees. As Farley raised his arms for defense, she struck him twice. Startled, then stunned, Farley almost went to his knees. He raised his arms, trying to fend off her blows.
Damn you, badger boy! Do something!
Farley's hat rolled on the ground. His head was bleeding. Andy grabbed hold of the wood she was swinging. Andy twisted the firewood from her hand and cast it away, but she closed in enough to leave deep tracks from her fingernails upon Farley's whiskered cheek.
Get this civet cat off me!
Andy got an arm around the woman's wide waist and dragged her away from Farley, only to have her on him instead. He managed to grab her strong hands and pull them behind her back. He handcuffed her to one of the posts that supported the windlass. Both men struggled for breath. Farley raised a hand to his head and then looked at it. He saw blood.
Ah! Damn you, boy! How come it took you so long?
I thought you said she was going to scream, faint, and fall down.
Farley gave him a look that would wither weeds. He dragged a sleeve across his sweating face and fired a shot through the open door.
You coming out, Bransford, or you want to fry like a slab of bacon?
A shaken man appeared in the doorway, hands above his head.
I give up! You don't need to shoot no more!
The woman glared balefully at her cringing sibling.
You ain't no brother of mine, you sniveling coward! There ain't but two of them! You could have got them both! Where's my husband, you ranger trash? What have you done with my man?
He's down at the shed, holding on to a fence post. Ain't done his milking yet.
The rangers had just one set of handcuffs apiece, and those were both in use. Farley tied Bransford's hands with a leather string cut from his saddle. He drew the binding down tightly.
Don't cut off my blood flow!
Shut up! Ain't near as tight as a noose. You're lucky that farmer didn't die. Now, where's the money you took off him?
Don't you tell them nothing, Joseph! That money's there, and if you just keep your damn fool mouth shut!
Farley tapped the muzzle of his pistol smartly against Bransford's upper teeth.
Bad advice can get a man killed. Tell me where that money's at, or I'll scatter your brains for the chickens to peck on.
It's in the cabin. Come on, I'll show you.
Andy followed him while Farley remained outside, wiping blood from his forehead. Bransford pointed his chin toward a wooden box beside the iron stove.
It's at the bottom.
Stand back yonder and keep your hands high in the air, Bransford.
Andy dug the stove wood out of the box until he found a canvas sack. He could tell by the feel it was full of paper. Coins clinked together in the bottom when he shook it.
Is it all there?
Just spent a little on whiskey and left a few dollars with the woman over at Fort McCavitt. What are you rangers gonna do with me?
Farley is plumb sore that you didn't put up a fight, but if I can keep him from killing you, we'll take you to camp. Then I expect they'll send you to Colorado County to stand trial.
What do you reckon they'll give me?
10 to 20 years, the captain said.
10 to 20 years? Seems like an awful long time for no more money than I got.
You shot the man you took it off of. Now get moving.
Andy motioned to Bransford to walk outside ahead of him. The prisoner avoided his sister's smoldering eyes. He stared at the sack, his expression solemn. Farley shook his bleeding head in disbelief.
We sure got us a sorry class of criminals these days.
A couple of horses grazed a few hundred yards away. Andy strode out and brought back the better of the two, a Grulla gelding for Bransford to ride. The woman fought the cuffs that held her against the well.
That's my husband's horse!
Bransford pointed out his saddle, and Andy put it on the horse for him.
Mount up!
When Bransford was in the saddle, Farley fetched up his own and Andy's horses. He unlocked Leech's cuffs and transferred them to Bransford. Leech rubbed his raw wrists, his face twisting.
You damned rangers think you run the world!
We do. We'll be back to get you the first time you let your foot slip.
That's my horse you put Joseph on. His is that jug-headed bay out yonder.
You just traded. Probably all stolen anyway.
After Farley mounted his horse, he poked the muzzle of the pistol in Leech's direction and forced him back to the house. Fortunately, the woman seemed to have used up most of her fight. She stood in fuming silence, trying to kill Andy and Farley with the hatred in her eyes, as Andy uncuffed her and got back on his own horse. As the three rode away, the woman picked up a rock and threw it, but missed.
Our old daddy's turning over in his grave, Joseph! You've given up so easy! You better give this place a wide rounds when you come back! You're a yellow-bellied, addle-brained simp! I'm ashamed to be the kin of such a coward!
Farley turned in the saddle as if thinking of shooting her, but then turned back, much to Andy's relief.
Thought we were going to have her fix us some breakfast, Farley.
She poisoned us.
How's your head?
If she didn't break my skull, she sure bent the hell out of it. You just stood there watching.
I jumped in as fast as I could. Anyway, first water we come to, we better wash the blood off of your face. I've seen butchered hogs that bled less.
Ah, look, Andy. It's enough that we bring the prisoner in like the captain told us to. No reason we gotta tell him about that woman.
Nearing the camp, the three riders came upon the company horses scattered to graze on an open flat. They were watched over by two rangers taking refuge from the sun's heat by shading up under a live oak tree. The end of the long ride lifted Andy's spirits. Fatigue seemed to slip from his shoulders. The prisoner had been sullen and quiet, slouching in the saddle. Andy could understand that, given the likelihood that he faced a long prison sentence. Farley had spoken little. He carried his hat on his saddle horn, for it had been painful to wear over the knot swollen on his head. The company camp had been established on the bank of the wide, clear San Saba River. Tall pecan trees sent shoots deep into the mud and cast a cool shade over a row of canvas tents. To this company of rangers, it was home. It was an easily movable home, its location subject to the region's changeable law enforcement needs. Earlier, the Frontier Battalion had busied itself primarily with keeping hostile Indians out of the settlements, or chasing those who managed to get in despite the long picket line of ranger outposts. Now that task had been largely eliminated by a relentless army push against the warring plains tribes. A concentrated military offensive, moving in from three directions, had forced most of the Indians to give up the fight and prepare to the questionable mercies of the reservation. Except for occasional limited outbreaks, the Comanches, Kiowas, and Cheyennes had been put out of action. Apaches still roamed in the far western part of the state and prowled the rough hills down along the Rio Frio and Upper Nueces. But the most destructive of the Indian raids were over. Of late, the rangers had turned their attention to the criminals who infested the state, especially its less settled portions, where escape was often fast and easy. Nowhere were they worse than in the limestone hills west of San Antonio, where dense cedar brakes and deep rugged canyons offered sanctuary, where water and game were plentiful, and a man could live off the land if the climate elsewhere became too hot. Thus, the principal ranger mission had shifted from Indian fighting to domestic law enforcement, to chasing murderers and thieves and border-jumping bandits, to breaking up feuds that broke out occasionally among the prideful, independent people, hardened to violence and easily stirred to deadly force. Protocol demanded that Andy and Farley deliver their report and their prisoner to the captain before they did anything else. Bransford cast anxious eyes at the camp as if he expected someone to step out of a tent and gun him down. He sweated more than the summer heat called for. Several rangers emerged from the tents or from under the shady trees to observe the three men coming in. Bransford's expression became even bleaker. Andy frowned at him.
They won't shoot you in the middle of camp. Not without you giving them reason to, Bransford.
Even if they did, who's to tell, Andy? One ranger ain't gonna call down the law on another. We decent people.
Bransford cast a fearful glance at Farley. He had probably expected a bullet in the back all the way from the Leech farm. Andy had said nothing to disabuse him of the notion, hoping fear would have a positive effect on his behavior. They pulled their horses to a halt outside of a tent, where Len Tanner walked up and stared at the prisoner.
This is a gank that goes around robbing farmers?
That's a charge, Len, but he ain't been tried yet.
Farley studied Bransford like a hungry wolf eyeing an orphaned calf.
He's guilty, all right. You can tell by looking at him.
That was the case, we wouldn't need judges and juries, Farley.
Or lawyers, neither.
As far as I'm concerned, we don't. We shot these snakes where we found them. We saved a lot of bother.
Sergeant Bill Holloway ducked to step out of the headquarters tent, then straightened his tall frame. He squinted against the sun, deep turkey tracks pinched around bleached blue eyes.
I see you got your man, Folly.
We wasn't sent out there not to get him. We've come to hand him over to the captain.
I'll take charge of him. Captain's busy right now. He doesn't like to be disturbed when he's bawling a man out. Dick Landon put away too much bad whiskey last night over at Fort McCavitt. Got into a cuss fight and tried to bend the barrel of his six-shooter over a citizen's skull. Lucky for him, it was one of them hard-headed Dutchmen.
Yeah, I've heard them Dutchmen cuss a few times. They just keep hammering pieces onto the end of words until they got one long train of swears you can't even understand. I don't know how they came up with that language. I think they got more letters than we do.
It was a seldom-discussed fact of Ranger life that isolation, boredom, and frustration led some men to drink heavily when off duty, and occasionally even on duty. This could result in unjustified confrontations with civilians unlucky enough to get crossways with them. Those men who became a frequent problem to their commanders were likely to be discharged quietly and encouraged to move on, lest they taint the reputation of the service. Landon had caused disturbances before. The captain had kept him on because he was a good ranger when sober, bold when the occasion called for it, a crack shot with pistol or rifle. Drunk, he tended to create trouble where there'd been none. It was said he came from a fighting family.
Dick, I'll never drink. Whiskey makes him mean.
Some people don't need whiskey for that.
If you mean me, Andy, I don't go hunting trouble. But if it comes, I don't run. I never shot a man that didn't need killing. Only regrets I've got are over some I ought to have shot but didn't.
I reckon Dick had reason enough to get drunk. He helped bring his own brother in yesterday on a murder charge.
How could he do that?
Well, he's a ranger, Andy. Dick joined to get away from a feud back in his home county. Seems like his brother Jace killed a man on the other side and came out hoping for Dick to give him protection. Rangers do their duty, or they quit.
I don't know if I could do what Dick did.
I think you would if the chips were down. Anyway, let's get your man secure. We'll take him down to the tree, and you can throw him in with Jace Landon.
Holloway led the three riders around the cook tent and pointed. Tanner tagged along with the group. The camp had no jail. For temporary confinement, prisoners were handcuffed to a chain locked around a thick trunk of a pecan tree a few steps up from the river. Most were removed to a regular jail as soon as possible. Landon sat on the ground, one arm locked to a sturdy chain. A big man, he stared resentfully at the officers and did not attempt to stand up. Andy untied a leather thong that had secured Bransford's handcuffs to the horn of his saddle. Andy dismounted and stared up at Bransford.
Get down.
Bransford's legs were wobbly as he slid off his horse. Andy was aware that Farley watched closely, a hand on the butt of his pistol in case Bransford decided to make a break. Andy unlocked one side of the cuffs, then relocked the open cuff around the chain. This allowed movement up and down the chain, but not away from it. Bransford pulled at the chain and found it heavy.
I've seen dogs treated better than this.
Dogs don't go around shooting the taxpayers.
There's no need to taunt the prisoner. Tanner, I'm sure you are headed toward a productive use of your time before these men arrived.
Yes, sir. I was just going to go fix that fence post.
Please, and carry on.
Yes, sir.
Folly, you and Private Pickett, go get yourselves some grub. I can hear your bellies growling all the way over here.
Yes, Sergeant Holloway.
What about me, Sergeant? I'm starved half to death.
You'll eat when we're good and ready to feed you, Bransford. Till then, an empty belly will help you contemplate your sins.
He walked off, with Farley riding behind, toward the mess tent. Andy remained a minute, studying Jace Landon. His face bore a striking resemblance to that of his ranger brother. At a little distance, he might mistake Jace for Dick. Andy had been trying to discern if there was any way to recognize a criminal on sight. So far, he had not come upon any common denominator. Bransford looked the part, at least as Andy visualized the outlaw type. He would have taken Landon for a preacher, or perhaps a ranger.
What if it comes in rain? We'll drown out here.
You can climb the tree and drag the chain with you.
Bransford pulled on the chain until Jace Landon turned on him, frowning.
Don't go riling him up, or we won't get any supper. Some of these rangers would throw their own brother in jail and lose the key.
That Farley Brackett kept staring at me like I had a target painted on my back.
You're lucky if jail's all you're facing. I'm looking at the rope. Getting shot might be the better way out.
The prisoner rubbed his raw knuckles. Evidently, his capture had not been without incident. The black cook grinned at the rangers as they approached. Andy grinned back in anticipation. He'd rather eat Bo's high-rising sourdough biscuits than cobbler pie. Bo could make sow belly seem like beefsteak. Somebody had been out hunting, so the cook was able to fry up some venison backstrap to go with Andy's and Farley's red beans. Andy believed in the Comanche adage that one should eat all he could hold when he could get it, because it might be a while before he got it again. Farley, for all his complaining nature, was normally a hearty eater. Today, he nibbled tentatively at what Bo offered. By that, Andy knew he still had a considerable headache. Bransford was lucky he had not been shot. A boy of about 16 years brought a blackened coffee pot and grinned hugely when he saw Andy.
Hey, Andy, did you get your man?
We always do.
That was a shameful stretch of the truth, but the boy had begun taking pride in his loose association with the Ranger Company. Andy wanted to encourage that feeling, for Scooter Tennyson had been headed down the slippery road to an outlaw life when the Rangers took him in. Andy held out his empty tin cup.
You been staying out of trouble?
I ain't been loud time enough to get in trouble. Bo's gonna work me to death.
He gave the cook a mischievous smile as he kidded him. Bo looked over at the boy and decided to live up to Scooter's complaints.
You get back to washing them dishes, boy. You didn't fetch me some firewood. After that, you can go fishing if you're of a mind to.
Scooter's mother was dead. His father was in the penitentiary. The boy had been riding with some of their father's outlaw friends until the Rangers captured him. Finding no relatives, they had more or less adopted him to steer him away from a pathway already blazed for him by his father. Scooter had been skinny and hungry-eyed when the Rangers first found him. He was filling out now, putting on weight.
Looks like Bo's cooking is good for you.
Sure is, Andy. I just wish it didn't make me work so hard for it.
The boy was earning his keep by doing light chores around the kitchen tent and fetching wood. Nothing that would cause him undue strain.
Work'll make a better man of you. Maybe you won't follow your daddy into the pen.
Yes, sir, Mr. Brackett.
Stung, the boy took the coffee pot back to the fire, and Andy frowned at Farley.
You didn't have to say that.
It's the truth. That kid was far gone before you got a hold of him. It'll be a wonder on earth if he doesn't wind up looking out through the bars just like his daddy. You're wasting your time trying to reform that Dodger kid. He's got a taint in his blood. Waiting for a chance to bust out like a boil on the butt.
It doesn't have to, if we treat him right.
I knew some folks who tried to make a pet out of a coyote pup. Wild blood always showed through. They finally had to shoot it.
Yeah, I know. Sergeant Holloway told you that story. People told Rusty the same thing about me. It doesn't have to happen that way if we give him a chance.
You give him a chance. I ain't got the time or the patience.
To Andy's relief, the captain arrived before he really got annoyed at Farley. He seemed to have regained his composure after dressing down the wayward ranger, Dick Landon. He gave Andy and Farley a nod of approval.
You all did a good job, Private Brackett.
It's what we get paid so high for.
Did you have much trouble?
Not with the prisoner.
You look like you tangled with a wildcat.
The captain bent to look at Farley's face. Andy was tempted to mention Leech's wife, but Farley looked into his eyes with a silent warning.
Horse fell with me.
At least it didn't cripple you. I have another job for you and Private Pickett. You two will deliver the prisoners back east to where they're wanted.
Handling two prisoners is a big responsibility. I'd rather take somebody older, as young and as green as grass.
Pickett is young, but he's not inexperienced. You were with him when he took an arrow wound.
Delivered by one of his red-skinned cousins. Getting wounded ain't no accomplishment. Anyone can do it.
You two are the only men I can spare. If you don't feel that you can go, I will regretfully accept your resignation.
I can put up with them if I have to.
Where are we taking the prisoners?
Southeast Texas, Pickett. You'll deliver Bransford to the sheriff of Colorado County. Jace Landon is wanted over the other side of Columbus. Seems an old feud is fired up again. tactic helped bring his brother in, then went off on a drinking binge.
I can see why he would.
Discipline has to be maintained or everything comes apart.
It's hard to figure people. Ransford looks like a hard case, but Landon looks like he ought to be preaching Sunday services.
You can't judge by appearances. Sometimes the men who seem the meekest and the mildest have the bloodiest hands. And I've seen some ugly-looking preachers.
If we take Ransford to Colorado County, I'll have a chance to stop by Rusty Shannon's farm. And you can visit your mother and sister, Farley.
They don't want to see me. Brought too much grief down on them.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Not long enough. You're done with us, Captain? I'll go see after my horse.
You're dismissed.
Watching Farley retreat, the captain shook his head and turned a speculative look on Andy.
He ought to be a sergeant by now, but he has a dark streak in him that confounds me. What's this about his mother and sister not wanting to see him?
It was back in the time of the state police. They mistook his daddy for Farley and killed him. Wounded his mother so bad she almost died. Farley figures his family blames him for all the trouble they had.
Do they?
I doubt they do anymore. And they know the war twisted him up inside.
Yeah, he's unpredictable, even a little dangerous. In some ways, that makes him an effective ranger. It also makes him risky to be around.
He's like a bear I saw on a chain. Even when he acts quiet, he's liable to jump on you and bite your arm off.
It's obvious I can't send Dick Landon on this mission. It would put him in an impossible situation. So it's up to you and Farley.
At least I'll have a chance to see Rusty.
Tell Shannon that anytime he wants to be a ranger again, he just needs to let me know. He's welcome in this company.
I'll tell him, but he's had more than his share of trouble. I think now he just wants to be a farmer.
The captain nodded to Andy and moved off. Scooter returned carrying wood and dropping it into a pile near the cook's fire pit. Andy pitched in to help him stack it.
Thanks, Andy. As soon as I get done fetching wood, I'm going fishing. Never got to do no fishing till I come to this camp.
You like fishing, do you?
It's about the funnest thing I ever done. Never got to do it before.
Yeah, I never did any fishing either before I went to live with Rusty Shannon. The Comanches lean to buffalo meat.
Oh, something else I'd like to do someday is hunt buffalo. I bet that'd be fun.
I was too young to ride with the hunters. They made me stay with the women and children. We skinned out the meat after the hunters got through. That was the work part, not the fun part.
I ever get the chance, I'm gonna kill me a buffalo.
You may never get the chance. They say hunters have scattered all over the plains, killing for nothing but the hides. Pretty soon there won't be any buffalo left.
How come the Indians don't stop them?
They've tried, but there's too many hunters. The army has driven most of the Indians to reservations, trying to teach them to farm and eat beef. The ones I knew are too proud to take to the plow. I don't know what's become of them.
You ever think about going up yonder to see them?
Sometimes. Got lots of friends there. But I've got a few enemies, too.
Take me with you. I'll help you fight your enemies.
Maybe someday. I best go see after my horse.
I'll catch a fish for your supper.
Andy half turned and gave the boy a smile.
Just what I've been hoping for.
Escorting prisoners carried a degree of risk. The more severe the crime and the probable punishment, the more the risk. Andy had little concern over Bransford, who had shown his fearsome reputation to be all smoke and no fire. However, he had misgivings about Landon. The captain's information was that Landon and his kin were carrying on a blood feud with a family called Hopper. Family feuds in Texas could be long-lasting and deadly as a den of snakes. Landon had waited for and shot one Ned Hopper on a lonely country road. Cornered by the Hopper-controlled law, he had wounded a deputy sheriff and made his escape, traveling west to seek help from his brother Dick. He'd not considered that the telegraph was faster than the horse. Farley checked to be sure the two prisoners' hands were securely cuffed and the cuffs tied to their saddles.
Either you makes a break, you're dead.
Ranger Dick Landon had watched from the front of the tent in which he slept. He came forward, his eyes full of pain. His face and his halting walk showed the lingering effects of his drinking spree. He looked up at his brother.
Jace, I'd give all I've got if I could have kept it from coming to this. I came out here to get away from the feud. I wish to hell you'd brought Flora and done the same.
Jace Landon turned his head away, not looking at his brother. He stared into the distance.
You went off and left the family. I done what needed doing.
When's it gonna stop?
When we filled up the graveyard with hoppers.
Ranger Landon turned toward Andy and Farley, naked entreaty on his face.
I know he's wanted for murder, but he's still my brother. Don't mistreat him.
If anything happens to him, it'll be of his own doing.
Farley jerked his head as a signal to start. Bransford led off with Landon behind him. Farley followed closely behind the prisoners. Andy brought up the rear, leading a little pack mule. Looking back, Andy saw Ranger Landon hunched with misery.
Farley, I feel real bad about Dick.
I got my own worries. I ain't taking on none of his. Dick had best watch out for himself and let the rest of his family go to hell.
That's a cold way of looking at it.
Don't be bothering me with other people's troubles. Yours either. Else I'm liable to leave you on foot and take prisoners by myself.
So that's how it is. Looks like we understand one another.
The important thing is that you understand me.
The captain had suggested that they push hard to reach Friedrichsburg before dark so they could lodge the prisoners in a secure jail. That way, both rangers could get a good night's sleep without having to stand guard. Though the German settlement was relatively young, as were most along the western fringes of the state, its broad dirt streets were already lined with sturdy stone and brick structures, built in a style brought from the old world. They were a sign that the citizens were not transients. They had established deep roots and intended to stay. A deputy had received the rangers at the jail and locked the prisoners in separate cells. Standing on the porch of the jail, Andy stretched to unkink himself from the long ride and looked at Farley.
Not the deputy to suggest the hotel?
I'm never comfortable spending my money foolishly. I sleep in the wagon yard.
Andy suspected the captain would have chosen the hotel, but the captain was better paid. Privates rode for $30 a month. At least nowadays, they actually received it. Rusty had told him that in earlier times, they often went unpaid for long stretches while the state struggled with a thin and leaky treasury. Andy followed Farley from the jail to the wagon yard, each carrying his rolled blankets. He knew it would look awkward if he, the junior of the two, took better accommodations. Farley was sure to let the other rangers know. Some would take it as a sign that Andy was being uppity. Among proud Texans, that was a cardinal sin. Farley turned on him and pointed up the street.
You don't have to copy me. Go to the hotel if you have a mind to.
They don't pay me any more than they pay you.
Andy thought about how pleasant it would be to order supper in the hotel, where they served meals on a white tablecloth. Maybe someday, when he had more money in his pocket. A working cowboy earned as much as a ranger, and seldom, if ever, had to face somebody with a gun and criminal intentions. The darkness was compromised only slightly by a lighted lantern at the open front doors of the stable. After the two men got their bedrolls laid out, Andy took out the loaf of bread and spicy sausage he'd brought to share with Farley. The other man had brought a bottle, but didn't offer to share.
I heard you say some people oughtn't to ever drink.
I don't drink enough to let it get in my way.
Andy watched a match flare after Farley rolled a cigarette.
Not that I give a damn, but I wonder what makes you itch so bad. You've never liked me from the time we first met.
I never thought much about it. It didn't seem important. But now that you mention it, I don't like you. You stole a horse from me once.
He never was yours in the first place. You were on the run from the state police and took one of Rusty's horses to replace the one you wore out. It was only right your pa gave that sorrel to Rusty. Not my fault Rusty gave Long Red to me.
I told my daddy I wanted that horse. Figured I'd earned him for all the work I did for nothing on that man-killing old farm.
Guess he didn't see it like you did.
A lot of things he didn't see like I did. Got to where I couldn't stay around him anymore. Those damn state police had no call to kill him.
You gave the carpetbaggers a lot of trouble. Don't you think you came out about even?
I tried to give them back as good as what they gave me.
Why then did you wind up joining the Rangers? The
state police was mostly scallywags. The Rangers are us. The old-timey Texans. You think after all I went through in the war and with the carpetbaggers that I could ever settle down on that farm again? You think you could after living with the Comanches?
If I set my mind to it. I just got a little restless, so I joined the Rangers. Wanted to see if I could ever be as good as Rusty Shannon.
What you think of the service, now that you've been in it a while?
I didn't look for it to be fun. Mostly it's been long days in camp standing horse guard or out following long trails that fade away before we find anybody. I can see why men like Dick Landon slip off and get drunk.
Excitement is considerable overrated. Now you better go on to sleep. Trying to make Austin by tomorrow night if the horses hold up.
Farley had put his finger on one problem Andy saw with the Rangers. Not much consideration was given to how well the men held up. They were expected to perform regardless of circumstances. But allowances had to be made for the horses. A horse couldn't tell an outlaw from a Baptist preacher. On reflection, Andy realized that he couldn't either. They got an early start on what was going to be a long day's ride. Bransford stood on the porch, unhappy that it was barely sunup. The same deputy who had checked the prisoners in, checked them out, and had Farley sign a release absolving Gillespie County of any blame should either prisoner make a break after leaving the jail. Landon's eyes were constantly at work, searching for a chance to get away. As a precaution, the deputy had put a set of leg irons on Landon. Fumbling with the key, Andy bent to unlock them so Landon could mount his horse. Landon brought his handcuffs and his fists down on the back of Andy's head, knocking him to his knees. Landon grabbed at the pistol on Andy's hip, but Andy twisted away, falling on his side so Landon couldn't reach the weapon. Farley slammed the butt of his rifle against Landon's head, making him stagger. Farley grabbed the back of the prisoner's collar and shoved him up against his fidgeting horse.
I've made allowances for you because you're Ranger's brother. Next time I'll bust your head like a watermelon.
Andy pushed to his feet, his head aching. Farley glared at him, too.
See what becomes of being reckless? Didn't the Comanches teach you to watch out for yourself?
My hat took the worst of it.
Andy's head drummed with pain. That was Landon's fault, but he couldn't condemn the prisoner for it. In Landon's position, standing in the shadow of the gallows, he thought he, too, would probably grab at any straw, no matter how flimsy. By pushing hard, they had reached Austin by sundown. Once Bransford and Landon were secured in jail, Farley and Andy reported to Ranger headquarters at the state capitol. It was a matter of form. Farley said he hoped local Rangers would be assigned to finish delivering the prisoners, but the officer in charge simply wished him an uneventful trip. Andy was pleased, for he had counted on a visit to Rusty's farm. They had left town on borrowed horses, where two hard days' travel had exhausted their own. Toward the end of the second day out of Austin, they turned Bransford over to Sheriff Tom Blessing, as ordered. Blessing, a large, blocky man, built like a blacksmith, had known Andy since he'd returned from his life with the Comanches. Farley stood by his horse, impatient to be gone, but Andy turned back to the sheriff.
It's great to see you, Tom. How's Rusty and old Chanty doing?
Rusty's got thin enough to hide behind a fence post. He don't sleep enough and he don't eat right. Still grieving over that girl he lost. He's got a good crop in that field, though. As for Chanty, you know how it is. You can't tell his age by looking.
I'll be going by to see Rusty once we've delivered this other prisoner.
Word's already out that you're on the way with Jace Landon. There's liable to be people waiting for you. If I was you, I'd deliver him in the dark of the night.
And act like we're afraid of his friends?
He's got more enemies than friends. I'd be afraid of them all.
Rusty Shannon leaned on his hoe and looked beyond the waving green corn toward a dark cloud boiling around the sun starting to set on the horizon. One more soaking rain should finish bringing the corn and his other crops to maturity. He wished that his Josie had lived to see it. Even the prospect of rain brought no real pleasure. Very little did anymore, not since Josie had died. A rider approached him, mounted on a mule. Rusty recognized old Shanty's slight, bent form and walked out to the edge of the field to meet him. He removed his hat to wipe sweat from his brow. The reddish hair that had given him his nickname was now sprinkled with gray. It was uncut and shaggy because he'd lost interest in his appearance. He hadn't shaved in a week. He lifted his hand in what he meant to be a welcoming wave, though it fell short.
Get down, neighbor, and give that old mule a rest.
How do, Mr. Rusty? Kind of hot. Building up to a summertime shower, looks like.
Shanty always addressed him as Mr. He had spent a major part of his 70 or so years as a slave, and old habits died hard, if at all. He had inherited a small farm from his former owner, Isaac York. For a time, he'd had to struggle to hold on to it, in the face of opposition from some in the community who resented his being an owner of property. That battle had been fought to a standstill with help from Rusty, Andy, and others like Sheriff Tom Blessing, who had kindly feelings toward him. Since losing Josie, Rusty had found it difficult to arouse much interest in his own farm. He frequently rode over to Shanty's place to help him with heavy work that had become too much for the old man to handle alone. In return, Shanty felt obliged to repay in kind, whether Rusty needed his help or not. He had spent more time in Rusty's garden than Rusty had.
I judge by the direction that you're not coming from your own place.
I've been over to Mr. Fowler Gaskins, helping him work his vegetable patch. Hoed his weeds, picked him some squash and beans and tomatoes so he got something to eat. You know, he's a sick man, Mr. Gaskin is.
Uh-huh. Sick of work, mostly. That old reprobate has enjoyed bad health ever since I can remember. You've done a lot of work for him, and I'll bet he hasn't paid you a dollar.
Yeah, Mr. Gaskin's a poor man. Besides, the book says I am my neighbor's keeper.
He never was your keeper. He did his damnedest to run you out of this country. He was one of them that burned your cabin down.
Yeah, we never did know that for certain, sure. We just supposed. Anyway, I can't be grudging again a sick old man. He says it won't be long till he's knocking on them pearly gates.
People would come from miles around to attend, just to be sure he was gone. No hog pen, tool shed, or chicken house was safe so long as he drew breath.
He's been speaking remorseful about all the wrong things he's done. Cries when he talks about his two boys that was killed in the war.
For years, Gaskin had been using his son's death in an effort to arouse sympathy. Most people around here had learned the truth long ago, that his sons had not died in battle. They'd been killed in a New Orleans body house brawl.
Well, that's just to get you to do his work for him, and do it for nothing. He still hates you, but that doesn't mean he won't use you.
I'm just trying to serve the Lord any which way I can. Someday I may be old and sick myself. Maybe Mr. Gaskin will come and help me.
It was pointless to continue the argument. Shanty was of a trusting nature. Freedom had not come to him until well into his middle age. Up to then, it would have been considered presumptuous of him, even dangerous, to pass judgment on anyone white. Now, he didn't know how. Rusty made up his mind to ride over to Fowler Gaskin soon and read the gospel to him. Shanty gave Rusty a quiet appraisal.
You're looking kind of lank, Mr. Rusty. Ain't you been eating?
It's been too hot to eat.
It don't ever get that hot. That girl's still heavy on your mind, ain't she?
Some things ain't easy for God.
Now you don't have to forget. Just take the things that trouble you and set them on a high shelf where you won't be looking at them all the time.
I've tried. Life has sort of lost its flavor around here.
Maybe supper would taste better to you if somebody else cooked it. I could stay and fix you something.
Thanks, but by the looks of that cloud, you'd better be going home before you get soaked.
Oh, that's true, Mr. Rusty. I'll be going, but you try to eat something.
I'll fix for myself if I get hungry.
Shanty nodded kindly, got back up on his mule, and continued on his way. Rusty knew it was too late to visit Gaskin. Tomorrow would be soon enough, or the next day. The extra time would allow him to think of more shortcomings to call to Gaskin's attention. He was about ready to quit the field and do the evening milking when another visitor appeared.
Hey, Rusty!
Well, hello, Tom.
Rusty had counted Tom Blessing as a friend as far back as he could remember. Tom was a contemporary of Daddy Mike Shannon, who had been a foster father to Rusty. As a small boy more than 30 years ago, Rusty had been carried away by Indians after they killed his parents. Unlike Andy Pickard, he'd been rescued a few days later. Because of Daddy Mike and Tom Blessing and several others, he'd not spent years among the Comanches as Andy had. Tom slid from his saddle and tied the reins to the fence post.
Follow me to the cabin, Tom. I'll fix us some coffee and warm up the beans.
Beans? Don't look like you've been eating regular. Not beans or anything else.
It don't taste all that good when you're by yourself.
You oughtn't to be by yourself. There's that sister of Josie's over.
I could fry up some bacon.
Sorry, but I ain't got time. Need to get home and do the chores before it rains.
Rusty glanced back, surprised. The cloud had grown considerably since he'd last paid attention to it.
And I'd better get the cow milked. Need to carry some dry wood into the house, too.
Tom nodded and got back into the saddle.
You be careful, Rusty. I'll check on you later.
I will, Tom.
Rusty hurried to the cabin with the bucket of milk and set it on the kitchen table just as the rain started. The drops were large and in the first moments struck the ground with force enough that they raised dust.
Oh, damn, it's hailing.
The air, so warm earlier, quickly chilled. The initial hailstones were no larger than the first joint of his little finger. Quickly, however, they became much larger, hammering the ground. Though he stood in the shelter of the open dog run, some of the hailstones bounced up and rolled against his feet. He stepped back into the kitchen doorway. Soon, the ground was white as if a heavy snow had fallen. He shivered, but some of the cold came from within. An hour ago, he had every prospect of a good crop. Now, he wondered if a stalk remained standing. As quickly as it had come, the hailstorm was gone. A slow, steady rain poured from the black sky in the gathering evening darkness, the kind of rain he had needed in the first place. Water dripped down into the cabin from holes in the roof. He would have to replace a lot of shingles, perhaps all of them. He moved the bucket of milk as water began dripping into it. He brewed a pot of coffee and slumped into a chair, holding a framed photograph from the mantel over the fireplace. His throat tightened as he studied the face that smiled at him from the picture. His shoulders were strong. They could bear this new burden. They had to. But they would bear it better if Josie could have been here. He imagined what old Preacher Webb would say.
The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh away.
Rusty bowed his head. The light of day brought no comfort. The rain was gone, and the morning sun was bright through breaking clouds. Rusty stepped out to survey the damage. He didn't have to walk all the way to the field. He could see from where he was that everything in it was beaten to the ground. He stood in stony silence a moment before turning to see a couple of dead chickens on their backs, their legs in the air. They had not made it to the shelter of the crude henhouse. The other chickens pecked around them, oblivious to their sister's fate. Some were half naked, feathers stripped away. Feeling as if a horse had kicked him in the belly, he walked to the garden where his tomato and okra vines looked as if a herd of cattle had trampled them. His field was a muddy ruin. The only salvage he could see was to turn cattle in on it when the ground dried enough. They might find a few days' forage. But he would have nothing to put in his corn crib, much less to haul to town and sell. He was well aware that a farmer's life was a constant gamble. Each year, he bet his land, labor, and personal welfare against the threats of drought, excessive rainfall, heat, and untimely cold, as well as insects and various orders of blight. Every so often, the farmer would lose his bet, and the best he could hope for was a better next year. Next year seemed a long way off, for this was still summer.
Rusty!
Tom Blessing rode up, his eyes sympathetic as Rusty walked out to meet him.
Just riding around checking on my neighbors. Looks like that hail knocked away out of you.
Yeah, what about your place?
Not enough to break an egg, hardly. Looks like there was just one strip of heavy stuff, and it hit you the hardest of anybody. Miss Channy's place altogether.
Oh, well, that's good. I may have to move in with Channy this winter. What about Fowler Gaskin?
I haven't been over there yet, but it doesn't look like the hail went that far.
If Providence was even half fair, Fowler's place should have been beaten into a puddle of mud.
Preacher Webb always claimed everything happens for a reason. Said no matter how cold and cloudy the day, the sun is still shining someplace. Maybe you can replant.
Garden stuff, maybe, but it's too late for corn. I won't be putting away any fresh money for a while.
Looks like your roof's got beat real bad. Want me to have a load of shingles sent out from town?
Can't afford to buy what I can make for myself. I've got plenty of timber down on the river. Tell you what you can do, though. See if you can find me a job.
I'll try, but I'm afraid there's not much to choose from around here. Times are slow. I'll let you know if I find anything.
Well, thanks, Tom.
Tom nodded and rode off to check on the next neighbor. Rusty went looking for his tools. When he went looking, Rusty found his saw was missing. So were the fro and mallet he used to split shingles the time he'd helped rebuild Shanty's burned cabin. He was certain he'd brought them home after that job was done. He knew where he was most likely to find them, at Fowler Gaskins. That scoundrel had a habit of borrowing without asking. Stealing, most people would call it, for he brought nothing back except under duress. He hitched his team to the wagon. The tools would be unhandy to carry home on horseback. He had no way of knowing what all of his property he might find, things he'd not yet missed.
Get up there.